eventually I'm going to talk about many body, you know, and very large. You will see it. So thank you very much. So I'm very glad to be here and to have a chance to talk on something I did recently on, a topic that I'm not used to work on. And Boris, we are very glad to have Boris at the University of Arizona. When was it, a week ago? And Boris, we had a discussion with Boris on something I'm doing. What I'm going to explain now, and Boris thought that it might be wise to have a very informal explanation, a very informal talk on this very very simple idea I'm going to present. So, as you, I'm supposed that you have, you know, actually I'm using transparencies that I used a couple of weeks ago for people in non-linear optics. So I guess that people, you know, everybody, at least in almost everybody in non-linear optics, knows that if you have a medium which is not back to which way?
Well, no, it's where you stand.
Oh, should I? Right, you know, and that is a picture, you know. So, out of the Maxwell equations, Maxwell's equation for propagation of light in fibers, and this is a good representation of the equation. So you have a little bit of nonlinear effects, which is represented by the cubic term in the equation. This is called the Kerr effect, I think after the name of it. British scientist of the beginning of the 20th century. And you have another term that represents the dispersion of the waves in the fiber. And this part of the equation looks very much like the Schrödinger equation, except for one thing. This thing that the second derivative is the second derivative with respect to time. So it changes nothing with what I'm going to say. But usually, you know, it's like the space in ordinary system, and z is the position along the fiber. So this equation is written in a frame moving with the velocity of the wave packet, if you wish. So it's the approximation that reduce the Maxwell's equation to this case assumes that you have a balance between a small nonlinearity. It's like near the onset of Rebinar convection, if you wish. So you have a balance between the small amount of nonlinearity, which is represented by the cubic term, and the dispersion, and the two dispersive terms, which are the first one and the second one. So you assume that you have a small effect of dispersion, etc., and of the nonlinearity and the balance to produce this equation, which is called the nonlinear Schrödinger equation in this field. So the number there, alpha and beta, the coefficient, or k naught is a wave number in the middle of the photon distribution, if you wish, and beta is proportional to a number called N2 that represents the strength of the nonlinear effect in the medium. So this N2, unfortunately, you know, it's very hard when you read the literature on this topic. You know, there is a huge variation of the value of N2 for the same material by a factor of 100. You know. So it changes what, you know, the order of magnitude that you get at the end, you know, are of course changed a lot because of this, spreading of the value of concrete value of N2. So the only thing I would like to say, but insist on.
Because of impurities? Why would it be so difficult to measure?
You know, you read at the textbook, you know, there is one by Newell and Maloney, and it gives Newell and Maloney gives 100 an N2 which is 100 times smaller than the one which is given. There is a review by a group called Erlangen Group in Germany, and they give values for the same material which is 100 times higher than Newell and Maloney. No explanation. So it's even in the logarithm, it's a big difference. Yeah.
But it depends what's on the zero.
Hmm?
It depends what's on the.
Oh, no, it depends on the wave number, but no, usually the wave number is all, you know, this kind of experiment is done they use always the same band, you know, which I'm not an expert in nonlinear optics. They use infrared light, you know, more or less always in 1.046 micron or something like that, you know. Everybody use the same kind of wavelengths because of the application, of course. So one thing which is important to realize that this equation is the nonlinear Schrödinger equation, but it has absolutely nothing to do with quantum mechanics, unless, you know, the quantum mechanics, of course, is hidden in the K note, you know, in the N2, etc. But besides that, the phenomena which are described by this kind of equation are purely classical phenomena. You have linear superposition of waves, etc. There is no H bar, if you wish. So these equations are, so I'm not going to talk too long on that. So it can be written in a kind of dimensionless form, you know, by convenient scaling of everything. You get this dimensionless form. So I'll try to stick as much as possible to the wall, close the wall. So you have a plus sign there, and the plus signs means that there is an attraction in physical terms, if you wish. You have a kind of attraction between the photons, which is what focusing means, okay? And I'll come back to this idea of attraction between photons. And so the dimensionless form, you know, and I'll explain at the end, if I have time, how to come back, you know, which is not an easy thing, how to come back from the order of magnitude obtained by using the dimensionless form to the physical order of magnitude, which is not not as easy as it looks, you know, to transferring, you know, the order of magnitude to physical numbers. And so you have it's because this equation is eventually it's derived from an action, which is written over there. There is also a Hamiltonian, which is given by this expression. So the Hamiltonian, it is in this Hamiltonian, I consider z as time, you know. So that's why you have the ut there. Anyway, this Hamiltonian. So what is for communication? It's because communication is one of the most important things in today's technology. So you need to communicate with others, and so the communication is by propagation of solitons. So because you have in this equation both a focusing because of the, as I said, the photons attract each other. And so the attraction between photons, in some sense, is balanced by the dispersion, and the two balance to make what is called a soliton solution. Soliton, by the way, is a word that was invented by Martin Kruskal, who passed away in last December. So you have a soliton solution that depends on one number, which, as you can see, as the amplitude of the soliton, which is this parameter nu. So when nu is the largest, the soliton has the amplitude of the soliton is larger, and the width of the soliton is less. So at larger amplitudes means that you have more focusing in some sense. And this is an elementary solution of the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. It was proved by Zakharov and Shabbat in 1971, I think, that nonlinear Schrödinger is an exactly solvable problem. And basically, it means that if you start from any initial condition after a time, you have only solitons. And solitons do not interact, basically, they cross each other without interacting. So a first thing which is not very easy to get, that requires a little bit of calculation, is to compute the number of photons, and that's going to be relevant for what I'm going to say. The number of photons as a function of the width of the solitons, nu is an inverse time, as you see, and as a function of this parameter nu, and so where is it? It is called they propagate, yes, of course, at the speed of light. You know,
it pop. Sorry.
It's
1/cosh of nu t.
Yeah.
Which tells me that t is still the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Nu is.
It's a pulse,
you know, it doesn't propagate, you know, because one is in the moving frame of reference. Everything is written, of course, you know.
Where?
It's written in the moving frame. So sigma, sorry. N tau node is a number of photons, and you have a relationship between the number of photons times the duration of the pulse, which is given by this expression. So the, in the, on the right side of this expression, you have something which is a constant, a material constant. So if you increase tau node, for instance, the duration of the pulse, because this is a constant, the number of photons diminishes. And if tau node decreases, so you have a very short time, very short duration, this tau node is very short, and it becomes very large. So you have many photons in a short pulse. So for a picosecond pulse, which is a standard, I've been told, you know, I'm not an expert again, standard value for optical communication, you have approximately 10 to the fifth photons in the pulse, which is a large number. Not terribly large, but really kind of large. So there is a first thing, which is significant for this discussion, is that if you consider, as I'm going to do, not everybody agrees with this view of the thing, so if you consider the pulse as a bound state of 10 to the fifth or maybe more photons, so the coherence of this, the coherence in the sense of the coherence of a bound state of this state of 10 to the fifth photons is the coherence of a single photon divided by the number of photons. Because every time a photon makes a transition, you know, from Raman scattering or whatever, you add a 2 pi or a fraction of 2 pi to the wave function of the system. This wave function, because of the interaction between the photon is weak, this wave function is basically a product of the wave function. And a product of the wave function, if you multiply this product by exponential 2 I pi or maybe I pi over 2, so you change completely the wave function of the system. And if and because this is the photons again interact only weakly, so the inelastic scattering occurs independently for all photons, and because of that, you have the probability of occurrence of an interaction for n photons is the probability of occurrence for one photon times n number of photons. So it means that the quantum coherence time of a pulse is the time coherence of a single photon divided by the number of photons in the pulse, which is bad because you divide by, you know, this current size, which is bad, not too bad actually, because as I said to Boris last week, you know, there have been a tremendous effort by the industry, by all the industry of communication, to increase as much as possible the coherence time of the photons in a fiber. So it's something which is very useful, you know, because you have a very low fibers, you know, that manage to, with a lot of effort, tremendous effort, to have a very long coherence time. So even though if this coherence time is long enough, so this ratio can be still not too short.
Pulses in some kind of number state, Hawke state?
Sorry, I don't
understand. What quantum state are you assuming the pulses?
What quantum state?
So is it just classical coherent pulse or?
So I don't want to come into that. So the quantization of the...
So quantum is just classical.
Let me answer your question if you wish. So the quantization of the solution of nonlinear Schrödinger has been worked out by Fadeyev and Korepin in 1978. So you can quantize nonlinear Schrödinger and the solution. So you have a full understanding of the what is a quantum soliton.
But so in practice, when people see these quantum solitons.
Oh, people never seen it. I've never seen any, so so I'm going to explain them how to see them. But
people have seen the soliton.
Sorry?
People have seen the solitons.
Oh, soliton have been seen forever. For
the solitons have been routinely seen.
Have been?
Routinely seen.
Yeah, for at least 30 years, almost.
But in this fiber system also.
Yeah, I know.
And
it is even used, you know,
But there, so when people see the solitons, they're typically in a coherent state, like in a classical state.
Yeah.
And there, this coherence time is the same as a single photon coherence time.
A single one. So I'm sorry,
I don't need to divide for the solitons.
I don't need to divide.
Yeah.
I need to divide. I don't agree.
It contradicts to experimental results.
No.
Yes.
So you have, it has, as I think the current time you refer to has nothing to do with this quantum current time. But maybe that will be clearer if I can go on a little bit. So
how is it defined, quantum coherence?
Wait a minute. Actually, this is related to a paper I wrote with this gentleman, Alain Pumier, in when did we do that? We did this is a paper by Alain and myself in 1985 on the coherence quantum time, of coherence. So if you know, maybe I'll answer. I'm afraid I will not, but maybe this is, that will be a way of answering you, some of you are worried. So what has been done by this list of people, beginning with Paré, a French-Canadian in 90, Kifshar in 93, Ahmediev, a collaborator in 93 and 95, and lately with by Boris Malomed in 96, is to study the case of two fibers. So you have two fibers. Each fiber is represented by the left side of the equation, and each fiber is coupled with the other fiber, but linearly. Okay, and the coupling, you know, physically is very simple to realize. You know, this kind of experiment has been done. You just bring together, you know, the two fibers close enough to have enough overlap of the wave function. You know, in the neighborhood of the fibers. So you have, this is represented by this kappa. Kappa is a coefficient that represents the quantum tunneling, the classical tunneling from one fiber to the next. It's something which is completely classical. You have a little bit of coupling between the two fibers. So this pair of equations is also derived from a principle of maximization, from an earlier Lagrange equation. And this kind of equation has been studied by this list of people. You know, it's not a new idea. So what I'm going to talk about are, first of all, the numerical observation by direct numerical simulation. So you have a parameter, and this is a traditional way in the field to represent the solution. So you have numerical observation, DNS, direct numerical simulation. So you have a parameter that represent the asymmetry of the stable soliton, so you have of the solution, you know, that you observe, you look for solutions that propagate as a bulk solution at a certain speed, and it depends, the structure of the solution depends on two parameters, Q, which I have not defined, which is something like the amplitude of the soliton, and kappa is a coupling. And actually, you can reduce the equation to only one parameter, this ratio. For large coupling, the only stable solutions that propagate in the coupled fibers is a symmetric soliton. You have two solitons propagating in some sense bound together, you know, and propagating along the fiber. And this solution becomes unstable for a value of Q over kappa, which is known exactly, which has been computed by, which has been found by Ahmediev, Neil Ahmediev, and it becomes unstable there. At higher value, at lower value of the coupling, so you see that the coupling is the denominator, so the stable soliton becomes unstable. And it becomes unstable, I should say, unfortunately for the calculation, by a subcritical bifurcation, which is represented by this line. And there you have another two different solutions, you have, which are linearly stable. You have an asymmetric soliton for very low coupling. This asymmetric soliton is completely on one side, or completely on the other side. They are symmetric of each other, so you have two solutions which are both stable, one soliton on one side and or on the other side. And they stay like that forever. So in some sense, it means that from the physical point of view, that the attraction between the photons which are inside the fiber is stronger when you are in this regime than the tendency of the photon, if you wish, to spread and to go to the other fiber by coupling by the quantum tunneling. So this is basically what was known about 20 years ago. So here you have a more refined version of the same figure.
Two solitons, if you launch pulses with you know, time lag in the two fibers, right? So if they're far apart, they're interacting weakly and...
No, they interact almost, the interaction is negligible because it is by the exponential tails.
Right, well, but, you know,
After a while, you know, there is a little bit of interaction. This, I'm not considering this kind of problem, you know. I'm considering the problem where there is only one soliton. And from the numerical experiment, when you launch one soliton in the unstable state, which is, so you can do that, and this was done, this had been done by including by Martin Weber. And so you, if you launch a soliton somewhere here, you know, in the stable linear, in the stable, linearly unstable symmetric state, linearly unstable, so you observe, you know, some sort of fluctuation, and after a while, you have either a soliton propagating on one side or on the other side, a spontaneous breaking of symmetry. Wow.
With arbitrarily weak coupling, it must take longer and longer for it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, right. You know, there are even estimates of the coupling. It depends on the power, if I remember, like case. So lifetime, I think, if I remember, is like 1 over kappa to the square. Because the sign of kappa doesn't matter, so you have everything depends only on even powers of kappa. So I'm, you know, for the moment, nothing is quantum except the number of photons and the coherence also. And so people, mostly, you know, there have been I would say an effort on several years to try to find the to explain this kind of behavior. So as you can guess, for those of you who did some nonlinear calculation because the bifurcation is subcritical, it is kind of hard to obtain, you know, information, reliable information on what happens near the onset of instability. What is even worse, which is kind of obvious on this diagram. So you see that the difference between the value for the onset of instability and the, in some sense, the saddle node bifurcation that you have here is extremely small. It's in the range of a few percent. You know, it's something which is, there is nothing fundamental, but it is an extremely flat, I would say, subcritical bifurcation numerically. So you, even if you try an expansion near this point, you know, and if you stop the expansion to the fifth or seventh order, so you are still very far from the true solution which is over there. So people try to go around this difficulty, and the most successful has been Boris Malomed. And what Malomed did was to use the following trick. So he used a Malomed and collaborators. He used a trial function, extrapolating in some sense between with inner parameters and extrapolating between the two possible solutions, the symmetric and the asymmetric solution, and And with you know this this was tried before, and but what Malomet did was to keep enough parameters in the trial function to have something that represents well this subcritical bifurcation. So because the problem has a variational formulation, so what you can do is to take a function of g and t and assume a certain dependence on with respect to t, which is written over there. You have this hyperbolic second function, you have the exponential t square, etc. And you have, besides this fixed time dependence, you have function of z, which are, you have four function of z, a, eta, theta, phi and psi and q. Actually, phi and psi, you know, are not, there is only one phase there, and q is related to a. So there are only four independent functions. So you plug this trial function, which has a fixed dependence with respect to t, into the Lagrangian. The action is obtained by the integration of the Lagrangian over z and t, and you get, because of the explicit dependence on t, a Lagrangian that is a functional of a function of z only, because you have imposed a certain form of dependence with respect to t. And this Lagrangian is written over there, in which three lines. And by writing that this Lagrangian is stationary, Boris Malomet obtained a set of, I'm worrying it might be a bit too technical or not interesting. So you get, what is interesting for my purpose is that this, with this choice of Lagrangian, you get results which are extremely close to what is derived from the exact numerical simulation. So it's a good, at least in this sense, it is a good trial function. You could always figure out, there is no expansion parameter. So in some sense, it is hard to say that this trial function is good or bad. You know, your only element of comparison you have is to compare it with the result of the exact calculation. And this Malomet function is a good function in this sense that at least you reproduce quantitatively well the result of the exact numerical simulation. So the idea, now I jump to the I should not maybe. So at the end of the day, one reduces the Hamiltonian, when this can be reduced to a Hamiltonian formulation. So you have two angles, C and theta, and two psi and theta angles, and the other one are momenta, Q and eta. And you have the pair of conjugate variables. I'm wrong. You know, the pair of conjugate variables are psi and theta, and q and eta, which actually is the inverse of eta. So this Hamiltonian doesn't present itself in the usual form of textbook of classical mechanics in the form of p square plus etc. plus v of q. You know, it's something where you mix together everywhere the momenta. It's closer to a Hamiltonian of an angle and action variable, even though it's not it's not written in an angle and action variable. You know, it's really awkward. But nevertheless, it is Hamiltonian in the sense that you have conjugate variable. So you have steady states, psi and q. You can derive this from the condition of stationarity, and those are the steady solution. And when you put in the steady state in the Hamiltonian the condition of stationarity, meaning that you have those two steady solution, so you have something which is left. If you think of the usual formulation of classical mechanics, I mean of Lagrangian of Newtonian mechanics, you have p square plus v of q, p square over 2m plus v of q. So you can define v of q by saying that this is h of p and q computed for p equals 0. So I define for this problem in the same way a potential in quote Hamiltonian, a potential energy which is obtained by setting to zero the momenta of the problem. And which is of course a very imperfect, you know, because this function is a function of many variables. And let me see. Fortunately, I don't see the right. So this one is probably the best. So what? Why do I do that? K and eta are the position variable, if you wish. So you have a position variable. So in this plane, or I mean, in the coordinates which are pertinent for the energy, the position, the energy as a function of the position only. One can plot this potential energy, which is in quote, which is again a potential energy in quote. So one has approximately this picture. So you see that here and there you have the two minima of the potential energy that corresponding each to a soliton moving in either on in one fiber or in the other. So you have two minima, and you have this is not something one can see there, but you have the potential that increases, and you have a saddle point here, and on the other side you have the other minima. So you have a symmetry of the problem between the two fibers, and that gives the idea that if I'm able to quantize this system, there is between the two equilibria, the two ground state, if you wish, there is a potential barrier, and if I can manage to cross the potential barrier, I will observe a kind of tunneling effect between the two states, the two quantum states. Okay. So you see it in the usual version, your semi classical quantization of the motion in the potential. So there is a first difficulty, or there is a, I would say, a zeroth order difficulty, which is when you explain that to the experimentalists, they ask you, but the tunneling effect is already in kappa. So what kind of new tunneling effect you can have? You know, tunneling effect, but it is a different tunneling effect. It is a tunneling effect that is a tunneling effect in the quantum sense. So you expect that the state, the quantum state of the two, the quantum state of the, soliton, will be a certain amount of probability of being there and a certain amount of probability of being on the other side, and there will be no linear superposition of the u and v of the function corresponding to those two states. That will be something purely quantum. It's like in the Schrodinger cat effect, you know, when you have the Schrodinger cat which is dead or alive, you know, it may be dead on one side and alive on the other. So when the Schrodinger cat, you know, there is no effect, you don't see anything like a linear superposition of the two states of the cat. So the next thing, which is actually building on this idea, so the next thing which is that remains to do is to compute the probability of tunneling of from one side of the barrier to the other, which is the probability of observing a coherent state where the, for instance, that will give at the end the probability of observing a coherent state where the soliton is in a linear superposition, coherent superposition of the two of existence on either sides of on either fiber. So when we look at the textbook in
kappa,
yeah,
kappa was no longer in the trial function.
Oh, the kappa was not. No, the kappa is there. No, the kappa is there. No, kappa is there. No, of course kappa is there. You know, because if you have no kappa at all. If there is no kappa, you know, of course there is no way to go from one side, you know, it ignores.
It is in
trial function. It is in Q. You know, there have been a lot of change of variable. It is in. No, it is there. Oh, it is. No, it's probably my bad handwriting. You know, I know that, you know, my French training at writing, you know, makes it very hard to people in this country to read me. You know, that's right. You know, we did write the letters in a different way than you.
But coupling is the coupling between the fibers.
Absolutely, it is there.
So, but it's not necessarily quantum effect. I can just think.
Oh no, this kappa is any number. You know, it's it has nothing. It's a classic, purely classical effect.
You said that it was already in the kappa.
I was saying that it is hard to explain to experimentalists working in this field, and I tried already to do that. You know, they ask, why do you worry about about tunneling? You know, because this tunneling is already this kappa, so why it is.
But it's not about tunneling, right? It's just an evanescent way.
Yeah, the problem is that the tunneling is used in two different meanings. You know, in one case, it is just a way of coupling classical waves. Although in my sense, it is a purely quantum effect that disappears for h bar equals zero. Although kappa doesn't depend, as I explained, kappa doesn't depend on h bar. So although the tunneling I'm going to consider depends on kappa. So now it's a bit a mess. Where I was, page 7. Where is it, page 8? I'm a bit sorry. Yeah. And it is a nice exercise that I would say in applied mathematics to find the I think it. A couple of questions related to that, which are not completely obvious. You know, when is used to compute tunneling, with a Hamiltonian of the form p squared plus p squared over 2m plus v of q. You know, but where p and q are mixed together, you know, when you have a functional problem, how to compute the tunneling in general is not an easy question. Actually, you know, when how to compute the action for the tunneling. So anyway, so the action for the tunneling. At least in the standard textbook in quantum mechanics, you change p squared over 2 into negative p squared over 2, and you keep the same value for v of q. That's the standard way. You compute, you reverse because you have a change of sign of p, so you reverse the potential from potential with 2L to potential with two summits, and the action. That is relevant for the probability of tunneling is the action of the motion starting from this point and ending at this point. And the probability of tunneling is proportional. There is a prefactor called the Van Vleck prefactor, which is multiplied by, in principle, a very small term. And this has to be small because otherwise the WKB approximation doesn't work. You have twice the action for the tunneling divided by h bar. This is where Planck's constant enters. At least. Okay. And what is nice with this problem is that one can, although it's not completely obvious, one can do this reversal of p into minus p for the Hamiltonian derived by the trial function, and one can compute explicitly this function as of this function of tunneling, which is not very actually. It's an interesting question because you are computing a tunneling factor, I mean a true an actual number for a problem which has a priori a certain which has a structure which is not very obvious, I should say. And so what we did find, of course, you know, the potential barrier is very high, and probably the approximation of quasi-classical approximation is very good if kappa is small. So we looked at
the quantization here is the system you had where z is time.
Sorry. Z in time, yeah, absolutely.
Time,
yeah,
time.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
So
you don't agree?
What are the units of h bar?
H bar, so maybe I'll come to that. H bar is a unit E times T, you know, because the action, the unit of action is, you know, the unit of action, if you have a consistent theory, the unit of action is always the same as the unit of H bar.
T is replaced by Z, which is a limit.
No, it doesn't matter, because S is integral over Z and T. No, it doesn't matter.
Some speed of light sitting.
No, you have a speed of light, but, you know, the S is integral over dz and dt.
Right, so here it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But nevertheless, you are pointing to a real problem, you know.
But you still need to get the right dimensions for.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I do that at the end, if you wish.
Light
that
varies, it's non-dimensionalization.
Yeah. So, what we did numerically, the probability of tunneling is proportional to an. See the dimensional probability, kappa over kappa c, to a power which is gamma over omega naught to t naught to q. So you see, it's a rather, I would say, non-obvious, why not say it, a non-obvious result, you know. You have, for instance, the time length of the soliton enters into the inverse cube in the probability of tunneling, and this is obtained by with h bar. You know, this is S1 over h bar. So what happens in this problem for a reason which is probably a bit too long? Sorry.
Gamma is
nonlinear, yes, of course. Gamma is nonlinear. It is a measure of the soliton action. So it's a number which I think I introduced at the beginning, you know. Has a very messy. Let me see. I think I introduced this. You know, this is this crazy combination of the nonlinearity, etc. You know, if you remember, I have it somewhere. Oh, sorry. This is this parameter, you know. This is the same part. This is this parameter, I think. Yeah. But you're right. Which I should. So gamma is, in some sense, a function of the, I would say, of the material parameters. So, you know, you have h bar, you have all sorts of parameters. So the strength or the energy of the soliton enters into this tau note. Everything else is a kind of material property of. It depends on c, h bar, etc. And what we, with Martin Lebert, with whom I did this calculation, what we did observe, what is that, you know, to have a classical physics in some sense applied to this working for this problem, you need to have this action as S1 of the action of the related to the tunneling effect much larger than h bar. And when you put the numbers actually from the fiber optics etc., you get that quite often, you know, this S1 is not much larger than h bar. It means that the application, at least for this kind of problem, the application, I think, of this classical Maxwell's equation for this kind of problem is not so well justified, because people are looking actually on when you have n photons. Of course, n photons means that you are in a domain where the number of you know, the you are in a quasi-classical domain. But the perturbation brought to the system by the nonlinearity and the dispersion are a little bit above the ground state of the system of n free photons. And the distance and the energies are such that the quantum effects are relevant, you know, for the modulation of this system of n free photons. And to end up, unfortunately, so I have to. This is a crucial figure, but unfortunately, I don't remember exactly. I think this is in. Which figure is it? I haven't too much time to prepare that. That gives. How can I say? This Z is a distance of. You know, you have out of this time T1 of exchange between pi tunneling between the two fibers, you can get a frequency or a length over which you will have exchange of the you start from a system, you have now a system with just regular quantum mechanics. So you have, instead of having one ground state there, you have a certain separation, you have an even and an odd state. The ground state is the even state, of course. And if one starts with a state which is on one side, which is purely on one side, which seems to be possible, so there will be oscillation between the probability of presence of the soliton on one side and on the other. And this, the
in practice, you need to make the two fibers somehow very similar. So that
they need to be very similar, you know.
Is that feasible?
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to say a few words on what is possible. You know, I'm not an experimentalist, as you know well. So the distance of the period, the distance over which you observe the oscillation is given there as a function of the, of the coupling, the dimensionless coupling. So you see, I think the distance is in meters. So you have a distance of the order of a few meters over which you will have this kind of oscillation, which is good, you know, because the meters are also, you know, because to observe this kind of oscillation, you need that the quantum state remains coherent. And to have coherence of this state, not a single photon should make a transition, not a single output. The fibers have to be stay close together. You know, but in the distance between that would be the wavelength of the oscillation.
Yeah, as you go down.
As you go down, move along. Absolutely, and this length, of course, has to be longer or at most of the order of magnitude of the coherence length of the soliton seen as a single quantum object. And to see that in this length is the length of the length of the, I mean the length of loads, or I don't know, the length of mean free path of the photon divided by the number of photons, and you can get, you know, numbers of the same order. You know, it depends, of course, on a lot of things, you know, depending on which fiber you work on. But I think it seems to be a doable experiment to observe this kind of oscillation. I mean, in real fibers. We hope to see that sometime. And what another kind of application, which is a bit more remote, is that the phase, the interest of this idea of coherent state of n photons is that the phase of the photons, because this is a state obtained by multiplying many wave functions, is n times the phase of a single photon. So we have, if you have 10 to the 6 photon or 10 to the 5 photon, so you have extremely large phase, and that changes this phase changes very quickly. And for instance, this can be a way of improving the sensitivity of gyroscope based on the Sagnac effect, because in the Sagnac effect, where you have a phase difference due to the rotation, the phase difference of a single photon there is multiplied by the number of photons. So this is something that could be done. And so I think, you know, and so to finish with what we did with Alain before he runs to away, even if the coherence time is much shorter, the quantum coherence time is much shorter than the tunneling time, there is still some tunneling between the two sides, you know. And this is because, you know, tunneling, there is always tunneling, you know, whatever happens. But the tunneling time it takes much longer, and you tunnel into an incoherent state without, of course, you know, because you lose the coherence on the quantum coherence, and you tunnel to a state which is, I think, which has no, which is purely diagonal. And this state, the time of incoherent tunneling is the time of the coherent tunneling squared divided by the quantum coherence time. So it takes much longer, but you still have tunneling from one fiber to the next. But then, you know, from the point of view of observation, you will say that there will be the fiber will be on one side with probability 1/2 and on the other side with probability 1/2, but there will be no possible interference between the two sides and the two states, because there will be no coherence between the two sides, between the two fibers. If there is any coherence, will be lost because of this transmission with a small coherence time. So I think this is about everything I had to say today. I thank you for your attention.
So what sort of coherence time is visible in the fiber?
I think they claim to have something of the length. I don't know, it's extremely hard, you know, because they express the coherence and the lifetime in decibel, so which is that helps. That helps. You know what is a decibel? So from what I understand, it can be a 100 kilometers. You know, it's about the maximum they can reach.
It's a ratio between nonlinearity and this length.
Or they claim to have a coherence length of the order of 100 kilometers. You know, I don't know under what condition. So if you divide this 100 kilometers, which is 10 to 5 meters by a soliton of a regular size, so you have something which is still in the meter range for a full soliton. And seems to, you know, actually they are not, the best thing probably would not be to do the experiment with fibers, because it's very hard to control the distance between two fibers. So what is much easier is to do a kind of a fiber optics, you know, on something which is deposited on a substrate, where everything is much better controlled, and apparently the quality of the material is also better. Yeah, please.
How sensitive is this to this trial wave function, which I imagine is designed?
Very good. So what we
the trial wave function is built to explain the physics.
Yeah, very good. The question is excellent. So, yeah, but it happens that for reasons that which is a bit hard too much time to explain, actually. It doesn't seem to be sensitive at all to the wave function. So we tried with we had the other Paré. We tried Paré wave function and the one by Hamediev also, the difference between the result is almost invisible. Apparently, this is because of a property which I do not understand fully yet, which is that you have. The main contribution to the S1, to the tunneling probability, comes from the complex extension of a certain function. That the, because when you do the, when you do the tunneling, computer tunneling probability, you have to change hyperbolic cosine function into hyperbolic function. And the cosine function are there because of the phase invariance of the original equation. I tried to find something more, I would say, more elaborated on that. For the moment, I did not. And because of that, everything is dominated by some complex extension of the exponential function, which is there in any function, in any trial function. And because of that, you always find at the end an expression of this kind, you know, with slightly different capacity, you know, which is, you know, the difference is you have a difference of a few percent of this capacity when you go. I tried to find, you know, which is, it is a bit a method for computing this tunneling without using trial function. You know, basically one should be, I'm not smart enough, but I'm sure that people could do that. One could use the full PDEs, use the full partial differential equation and solve completely the problem, you know, in terms of transform the problem into a problem of solving a PDE with certain boundary conditions, etc. For the moment, I did not succeed. I think it's a good challenge, you know, because the equation looks so different of what one is used to, you know, this Lipatov and company problem, you know. But this one is has a very different structure, so maybe there is a way of doing the WKB quantization with the. I have not found it, so I don't think that it will change, you know, much the final result. You know. I hope not.
So somehow you have a Schrödinger cat consisting of 10^5 photons.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a Schrödinger cat consisting of 10^5 photons. So you have quantum behavior of what in the beginning we thought of as classical objects. So can I just think of this as it is being held up by held together by that strong attraction of photons.
Yeah.
So that one of them wants to tunnel, all of them wants to go together.
Yeah, they would like to, you know, what my, you know, it's hard, as you know, as we all know, you know, I think most all of us have been teaching quantum physics. It's hard to sometimes to figure out to explain what it is, you know. I would say my explanation is that even though you have 10^5 or 10^6 photons, so there are always fluctuation in the number of photons. And the transition from one side to the other is by a fluctuation of the number of photons of one side and you know, normal fluctuation or whatever in the quantum sense, you know, quantum fluctuation. So number of photons is not fixed, you know. And you have a fluctuation on the number of photons on one side and the other, on fluctuation on the number on the other side. And by the, at some point, you know, the fluctuation is so large, then you get, you. The quantum fusion are there. Yeah, but once you quantize it, you have quantum fluctuation. Quantum fluctuation, as far as I'm aware, you know. Certainly is a quantization, a fluctuation of the number but it's true that by transforming your problem into a problem of, into a problem of, with a trial wave function, in some sense, you completely lose contact with the original formulation of the equation. You know, you don't see any fluctuation, nothing. You know, the number of photons, you know, for example, the number of photons, does that make sense with the trial wave function? You know, because you don't see it. You know, so it's hard to. It would be better from this point of view to have a formulation in terms of the original equation or the
some coherent state.
Absolutely, but. Absolutely, I would. Yeah.
I think I can understand now, but you know better what you are trying to do.
Oh, good.
So, I think kind of like maybe I have like a comment and sort of also a question. You know, so in my comment is sort of the I think a state of the art in the kind of creating the sketch states is actually your colleagues at NS, right, who can make these cat states maybe of 10 photons. So I think, you know, this kind of 10^5 photons, I would say, you know, I think it's probably impossible. You know,
to do what?
To have this cat state, to have this really, you know, what you're proposing to make this kind of superposition of these two guys, which are, you know, one's traveling another one and you know, in the fiber, another one in the other fiber. And so I think the issue is simply, as you pointed out, that this
think will die instantly. And it's kind of a, I mean, the Hegron.
What dies instantly? What dies instantly? What?
The coherence between the
two. No. It doesn't die instantly. No, I give the order of magnitude. It doesn't.
But it's actually on sort of on the positive side. Okay, so there are two things. You know, people are doing. I mean, people are doing experiments of this kind. Actually,
they
are doing experiments. Yes.
We haven't found any.
Yeah. So I can give you some references. So people are doing experiments with these quantum solitons.
In one fiber, there are many, but not in with two fibers.
No, that's right. But sort of what people have.
We haven't found any experiment with two fibers, I can tell you. With one fiber, 1,000.
There are some interesting manifestations here. For example, in one fiber, one could sort of, try to send, sort of pairs of these soliton pulses and look how they collide.
But that was not done. This has never been done.
And people have actually seen, people see, so normally the solitons are classical objects. But of course, because it's a non-interacting system, there is some quantum noise. And people have seen some, weak kind of correlations, in soliton collision,
I know what you refer to. But this is always in one fiber. Always in one fiber.
It gives you, it gives
it's
you
a different
sense,
idea.
But it gives you a sense of what.
It gives you no sense of nothing. It's a completely different thing.
But actually, on the positive side, just on the last week during the conference, there has been some talks which actually were people.
I was not here. I know.
Where people are thinking about sort of. Basically, it's a challenge here is to create a system which will have a really kind of high non-linearity at a single quantum level, kind of compared to losses. And so there, one could maybe have there are some of these ideas might not be.
You should read my paper, so. Should tell them.
I have a suggestion. I think you have the beginnings of a nice friendly discussion here. So sorry, continue.
Absolutely.
Afterwards.
Yeah.
So let's thank you again.
Well, pleasure for me to come here.